At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. The head of the political unit at NBC News is now reported to have been actively working with the former chief of staff of the Republican National Committee to try to stir up a social media groundswell to save Ronna McDaniel's job at NBC News. And she, and perhaps the chairman of NBC News as well, were reportedly willing to throw MSNBC under the bus and reportedly willing to throw its ex-Biden press secretary, now budding star, Jen Psaki, under the bus. And for good measure, reportedly willing to throw Chuck Todd under the bus in hopes of saving Ronna McDaniel and perhaps saving their own jobs as NBC executives. This is important beyond your ordinary media car crash and debris field, and its fascinating confirmation that there are no adults in television and very few smart people as well, because unlike, say, CNN, NBC is not one news entity. It has NBC News, it has MSNBC, it has CNBC, it has Telemundo, it has local NBC News operations in most major cities. If its key executives are colluding with operatives of one political party, one very anti-press, anti-news, anti-democracy political party, by being willing to damage figures formerly with the other political party who they now employ and the primary source of TV commentary designed for the adherence to that other political party, if they are willing to do that, this is an enormous scandal that transcends the hiring of Ronna McDaniel, the firing of Ronna McDaniel, or television news itself. It's Puck News that is reporting that after McDaniel debuted on Meet the Press on Sunday, and after Kristen Welker told the audience she had no say in McDaniel's hiring, and after Chuck Todd attacked that hiring, NBC News Chairman Cesar Conde and Vice President Carrie Budoff Brown were unnerved, but both, quote, seemed to anticipate the impending insurgency and frantically tried to preempt it. On Sunday, Budoff Brown reached out to Ronna McDaniel's aide and former chief of staff at the RNC, Richard Walters, to see if there were any friends or colleagues who could speak up on her behalf. The two sides also discussed having those folks call attention to what they saw as a double standard. After all, this was the same network that was turning Psaki into a Maddow-adjacent primetime star. Walters later assured Budoff Brown, the NBC vice president, that they'd been able to advance conservative pushback on social media against Chuck Todd specifically, and that this might give NBC News some cover, for which Budoff Brown thanked him unquote. You heard that right. The vice president of news for political coverage coordinated with the former chief of staff at the Republican National Committee to try to dirty up MSNBC's first promising new host since I hired Maddow out of my own pocket in 2008 to subject Jen Psaki to, at least, ginned-up criticism from the right on social media and maybe by television columnists and those who cover news about the news. Puck does not explain why Conde is mentioned at the start of this startling detail, or if he knew or approved of what Budoff Brown was doing with the ex-RNC chief of staff. Incredibly, that NBC News vice president, Carrie Budoff Brown, confirmed all this to Puck News in a statement. To quote it, "After Meet the Press, I had a conversation with Richard Walters and asked if McDaniel had supporters who could speak on behalf of her being an NBC News contributor. I never discussed what to say, how to say it, or who to focus on," unquote. Carrie Budoff Brown, everybody, vice president of NBC News and chair of the board of directors for the International Center for Journalists, which describes itself as a nonprofit dedicated to promoting journalistic integrity. I might add, journalistic integrity, but not at NBC or MSNBC, and not if you're Jen Psaki or even if you're Chuck Todd, confirming that she conspired with the chief of staff at a political party now dedicated to undermining faith in elections and democracy itself to bolster a disqualified, dishonest commentator in whose hiring she had just played a primary role by undermining her company's primary news operation and its newest anchor. And despite whatever complaints you or especially I might have with him, and the complaints I have with him are large enough and public enough that he hates my guts, who moderated your own operation's primary news vehicle for 9 years, and if he didn't work out, Chuck Todd damn sure worked hard. In some respects, it is more unbelievable that Carrie Budoff Brown did this than that NBC News hired Ronald McDaniel in the first place. That statement ain't the flex you think it is, madam. It is a confession to the business equivalent of a cover-up. Somebody who read it asked me why she hasn't been fired yet, and my answer was, because it isn't 5 p.m. on Friday yet. And now we move on to the next question. Is Carrie Budoff Brown going to be the only one of the NBC News executives likely to get fired now because they were stupid enough to think that their audiences, that America, that their journalists and opinionators would accept the former head of the Republican Party, who's still actively denying the legitimacy of an American presidential election, still rationalizing her own effort to undermine democracy as recently as in her debut on Meet the Press, still lying about provable facts about the Democratic Party as recently as this past Sunday on NBC, which, if any, other NBC News executive is going to take the fall for having engaged that network in a shocking and disgraceful episode? Who else is primarily responsible for this colossally stupid plan and its newest, extraordinarily, panoramically, almost immeasurably unconscionable coda, the Budoff Brown scheme to make Ronna McDaniel look better by making Jen Psaki and MSNBC look worse? The favorite among the early answers is all of them. The Hollywood Reporter has also published its insider TikTok piece, not as well sourced as Puck's, and the title is kind of boring, "The Leadership Vacuum That Led to the Ronna McDaniel Fail at NBC." Puck's is Rana Ghazi. But the pictures under the Hollywood Reporter headline are the real tell. There's an image of McDaniel next to a picture of NBC News chairman Cesar Conde. And Conde is on there because the point of the Hollywood Reporter piece is Cesar Conde will not survive this. The first non-Rana part of their story is about Conde's failures. The first non-Rana paragraph begins with the unstated prediction that Conde just blew his chances for promotion within NBC, and it ends with the unstated doubt that he'll be able to keep his current job. It starts with, quote, "For Conde, who is believed to be angling to rise to the CEO job at NBC Universal in the fullness of time, it's fair to question whether this deeply embarrassing episode will have major consequences." The same paragraph ends with, quote, "The news division seems to have fallen prey to a confusing leadership structure at a level one rung below Conde, who, as one insider put it, quote, is not a news guy," end quote. Well, even if he is a news guy, The Hollywood Reporter's implication is he won't be one for much longer. The official version of all this is that the McDaniel hiring began with Carrie Budoff Brown, extended to the president of editorial at NBC News, Rebecca Blumenstein, got unanticipated support from the hapless president of MSNBC, Rashida Jones, and culminated in the green light from Cesar Conde. That those above Conde in the NBC and Comcast management structure, like the acting chairman, Michael Cavanaugh, and the ultimate boss, the owner, Brian Roberts, that they knew nothing. However, again quoting The Hollywood Reporter, one NBC veteran questions whether higher-ups, even including Roberts, weren't at least informed of the arrangement, that is, the hiring of Rana McDaniel, before it was announced. At minimum, this person suspects that Kavanaugh might have been looped in. Quote, "You do not hire an election denier without having it vetted." If that wasn't the case, says another longtime insider, leadership problems are to blame. In terms of NBC News, this person says, it sort of stinks from the head. Of all the divisions in the company, someone has to be in charge of news. Unquote. If that were not enough, Puck News adds on this subject, quoting another NBC News journalist, "Executives need a moment where they fight for the team. And Cesar never had that moment. He has no relationships with the news division," the journalist later added, "never really has tried." Good night, Cesar Conde, wherever you are. It is hard to believe that this sentence might now apply. But wait, there's more. While the third member of the NBC gang that couldn't shoot straight, the president for editorial, Blumenstein, gets away with no more of a connection to Rana McDaniel than a love of Michigan that they share, there is one more genuinely shocking development, again from Puck News. Quote, "There was no discussion of putting McDaniel on the avowedly anti-Trump MSNBC. Late in February, however, Carrie Budoff Brown reached out to McDaniel with a new development. Rashida Jones, the president of MSNBC, was very interested in having McDaniel appear as a contributor on her network as well. Was that something McDaniel would consider? McDaniel said she would." Well, if she did, she was the only person connected to MSNBC who would have ever said that in 10 million years, except the president of MSNBC. And remember, when the spit hit the fan last Sunday, when seemingly everybody in American politics who was not a vice president, a president, or a chairman at some branch of NBC News or another realized that this was not just the hiring of an election denier, but the elevating of election denial to a place of legitimacy in the unending corporate quest for political media both sidesism, and it was the whitewashing of an amnesty for somebody on the outer fringes of actual conspiracies like the Trump fake electors plot. While everybody was figuring that out, MSNBC president Rashida Jones was telling her enraged on-air talent and producers that no, of course Rana McDaniel would never appear on MSNBC. Just because weeks earlier MSNBC president Rashida Jones had offered her money to appear on MSNBC. And now Jones was saying the opposite, even as the vice president, Budoff Brown, worked with Republicans to save McDaniel by making MSNBC and Jen Psaki the victims in the latest corporate round of both sides and whataboutism. And then Jones was additionally quoted as saying yet another thing that she had never promised anybody: McDaniel would not appear on MSNBC. She had only said there was no anticipation that she would appear on MSNBC. And if that sounds like it was a distinction without a difference, remember that on the air Monday night, Maddow specifically called out attempts to leave the door open for McDaniel on MSNBC. Quote, "We were told this weekend in clear terms, Ronna McDaniel will not be on our air. Ronna McDaniel will not be on MSNBC," unquote. Rashida Jones may still have an office at 30 Rock. She may still have business cards that say otherwise. But for all intents and purposes, Rashida Jones is already the ex-president of MSNBC. And we are still not done here. The new insight into the Ronna McDaniel era at NBC and MSNBC, 5 days that felt like 5 lifetimes, 5 days that were unforgettable, no matter how hard we will try, is also extremely damaging to somebody else, somebody on the air, to the already wobbling moderator of Meet the Press, Kristen Welker. Again from Puck News. As chance would have it, McDaniel was already scheduled to visit the NBC News Bureau in Washington for an off-the-record meeting with Meet the Press's moderator, Kristen Welker, unquote. Uh-oh. Quoting, "In light of the network's new interest, Budoff Brown joined that meeting and, with Welker present, continued to pitch McDaniel on coming to NBC News as a contributor. In a statement, an NBC News spokesperson said, as Kristen disclosed to viewers on Sunday, she was in no way involved in McDaniel's hiring, nor was involved in the decision-making process, and did not participate in conversations surrounding a contributor contract." Now that's a distinction without a difference. Kristen Welker had a meeting with Ronna McDaniel a month ago. Suddenly, the vice president for political content of NBC News shows up at that meeting along with Ronna McDaniel. At that meeting with Ronna McDaniel and Kristen Welker, that vice president continues to pitch McDaniel on coming to NBC News as a contributor. A month later, McDaniel is suddenly booked as the lead guest on Meet the Press. And a week ago today, Kristen Welker is informed that McDaniel had been hired as an NBC News employee. But Kristen Welker didn't have any idea she might have been hired as an NBC News contributor. She said so on Sunday. This speaks poorly to Kristen Welker's honesty, or her memory, or both. Phew. There are other bits of collateral damage strewn about that part of the morgue now containing Ronna McDaniel's NBC News career. That part of the morgue which may soon have room for the careers of Rashida Jones, Carrie Budoff Brown, Cesar Conde, maybe Kristen Welker. An NBC News PR flack is said to have told McDaniel on Monday afternoon that the MSNBC hosts were, quote, effing insane, only he didn't say effing. The PR flack is then quoted by the Puck News writer as saying that's not true. And the PR flack implies that it was told to the Puck News writer by Ronna McDaniel. There is also the hilarious and hilariously and conclusively damaging tidbit that until they dropped her, the CAA talent agency represented Ronna McDaniel at the same time that it represented Carrie Budoff Brown. I could go through the history of management at NBC News and MSNBC. I mean, this is technically the internet. It is infinite. Just for the moment, think of the worst people you could find for a job like that, getting those jobs. And then, as the cliff is approached, suddenly somebody says, "Wait, I found people who are even worse." And the first group of disasters is fired, and the second group is hired. And as the cliff is reached, Then somebody else says, no, wait, this third group over here, they're even worse than the first two combined. I'll tell the saga later in the podcast, the representative saga of the 200 or so sagas I went through in my decade at NBC News, of the day things got so bad and management proved so incompetent that the chairman of GE called Jeff Zucker and threatened to shut MSNBC at its $200 million a year profits off that day because they were criticizing him by name on Fox News and his mother had heard it. But ultimately, if there is one glimmer of hope in this amazingly bad saga, it is the idea that NBC will not try this again. And the underbidders, the grateful underbidders for McDaniel from ABC and CNN, they are not going to go grab her now that she's available. And I don't think any network with any level of responsibility is going to offer anything to anyone more Trumpist and less radioactive than Mike Pence or Michael Cohen anytime soon. In fact, there seems to be that rarest of things in TV news, journalistic introspection right now about the whole concept of bringing in former party officials and executives as experts, as if they were football coaches between jobs. Quote, as one former Republican official who achieved great success in the television business said of McDaniel, added Puck News, she's not entertaining and she's not an expert. So what's the point? A couple of postscripts. I mentioned that McDaniel had lied about Democrats on Meet the Press last Sunday, so that meant she had a lifetime lying average of 1,000 on NBC. Here is my math. McDaniel said the RNC is involved with 78 election integrity lawsuits, including, quote, ones in Montana right now, with Democrats suing to say you should be allowed to be registered to vote in two states. Why are they suing on that, unquote? They aren't. Two liberal groups in Montana are suing to block a law there that would establish a criminal penalty for anybody who is registered to vote in one state, then moves to Montana and fails to immediately deregister in their former home state. It is already illegal in Montana to vote in each of two states. The liberal groups just want to make sure nobody gets fined or sent to prison for still being on the rolls in another state and not voting in the other state. In the Trumposphere, McDaniel, who as late as last Friday was the equivalent of roadkill, is rapidly being remodeled into a martyr. I don't know who is going to keep MSNBC informed of what normal people think, said Hugh Hewitt, fired by MSNBC on Fox yesterday. Hugh Hewitt, who, like all normal people, could not afford completely different first and last names. Because Ronna McDaniel is about as normal as they come. She represents the Republican Party. Hewitt redefined what it means to represent the Republican Party. He said that McDaniel never denied the election results. Ronna McDaniel, July 14th, 2023. Quote, I don't think Biden won it fair. I don't. I'm not going to say that, unquote. Ronna McDaniel, a little bit more recently than last July, March 24th, 2024, on Meet the Press. I think it is fair to say I think there were concerns then in 2020. And lastly, Trump, all caps, managed to attack Brian Roberts of Comcast, Chuck Todd, everybody on MSNBC, and the person he now is suddenly again calling Ronna Romney. It is notable, and it is a good final laugh, that in this story, Trump is a sideshow.
A
Also of interest here, I'll tell that whole saga of the day they literally were ready to shut down MSNBC. Fire and pay me. Fire and pay Maddow. Fire and pay Matthews. Fire and pay everybody. Replace us with cartoons or the news in Welsh or something. And then God may work in mysterious ways, but when the devil wants you to deny yourself and deny your beliefs, apparently he does so by hitting you in the mouth with a golf ball. Oh, you may laugh, but that was said in public at a convocation speech at Liberty University, no less. And unlike you, I have to say, it was said in public by a woman with whom I used to host SportsCenter. That's next. This isn't SportsCenter, it's Countdown.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts. If you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This is Countdown with Keith Olbermann.
Still ahead of us on this edition of Countdown. Well, as we near the one-week mark of the NBC-MSNBC Ronna McDaniel crisis that I'm enjoying way too much, let me tell you the whole story of the real NBC-MSNBC crisis, the greatest of all time, the day the chairman of the corporation that owned both networks got so pissed off at being stalked by Jesse Waters of Fox, and so pissed off at me and so pissed off at MSNBC that he decided to close MSNBC, to shut it down that day. Starring Jeff Zucker, Rupert Murdoch, Roger Ailes, Rachel Maddow, Chris Matthews, Bill O'Reilly, me, and a cast of thousands in Things I Promised Not to Tell. First, still more new idiots to talk about, the daily roundup of the miscreants, morons, and Dunning-Kruger effect specimens who constitute today's worst persons in the world. First, the bronze, worse, Maria Bartiromo. Tuesday, she was insisting that the Baltimore Bridge collapse was the fault of open borders, which translated from the Long Island means open borders. Yesterday, a new story. She was complaining to a conservative Congress slob named Jeff Van Drew that money might be spent to rebuild the bridge. Isn't there money already allocated towards transportation? Which meant, isn't there money already allocated towards transportation? She wants the Francis Scott Key Bridge rebuilt out of whatever loose change we can find in the government. This person used to do actual business news. I do not know, in retrospect, how the nation survived that. I will congratulate Maria Bartiromo, though, on one thing. It's impressive that in the morning she's on one Fox propaganda channel as herself, and then in the afternoons she uses a slightly different New York area accent to create a slightly different character on the other Fox propaganda channel where she portrays, quote, Judge Jeanine Pirro, unquote. It's a lot of work. The runner-up, worser, Jamie Comer. You remember Jamie Comer. He's the guy who spent 14 out of the Republicans' first 14 months in the congressional majority trying to impeach Joe Biden or Hunter Biden or Larry Blyden or T.R. Bryden of the 1986 California Angels or Joe Budin or somebody, damn it. Turned out there was no evidence, no witnesses who weren't in jail or lying then in jail, or lying then left lying down in jail. There was no vote. There was no nothing. Comer is radioactive now, even within Republican circles, having failed to dirty up the president, let alone get him on television. But that's not the way he sees it. There's loads of evidence. There's convincing witnesses, unavoidable crimes, except the conspiracy is keeping America from realizing all that's true. Because, according to Comer, there is one man who is using some sort of super mental powers to hypnotize the nation into not seeing the evidence that is right before them. In this interview with generic right-wing podcaster number 227, James Comer reveals that the man hypnotizing the nation, the man mesmerizing America's conservatives and liberals and everybody else, that man with the super powerful mind is Merrick Garland.
There's this counter effort being made to try to sell the American public on the idea that you guys haven't found anything. And I think we're dealing here with actual living, breathing business partners testifying on the contrary to quite an extent. So what do you liken this to? Is this Garland just trying to be a human shield for the president? Like, what is this?
Well, Garland's working with the deep state, who's working with the liberal mainstream media to try to indoctrinate into people's minds that there's no evidence.
Merrick Garland? Working with the deep state and the liberal media indoctrinating America? I wish! Merrick Garland working? I wish! I mean, Jamie, pick somebody influential in the Biden administration for your telepathic conspiracy thing, and maybe we can talk. Somebody like Commander the Dog. But our winner, the worst, Sage Steele. On those half dozen or so occasions when I co-anchored ESPN Sports Center with Sage Steele, including those couple of days when she came to New York to try to figure out why it was people actually thought I was almost as good at doing Sports Center as she was, I frequently and silently asked myself how it was that she had not yet done something so overwhelmingly stupid that it would instantly end her career. She was so disconnected from reality, and I mean, she didn't understand that the microphone she was wearing on her lapel could be turned on by somebody she couldn't see, so she wouldn't know when that microphone was live. She was so disconnected from that reality that I really used to fear that she would accidentally wander out into the streets of Manhattan and towards the East River and never be seen again because she did not seem to know that she could not walk on water. Then she started doing these overwhelmingly stupid things that I always worried about in bunches, attacking her bosses for vaccination requirements to work in a huge studio complex during the height of the pandemic, and then suing them, getting angry because as a conservative and an army brat and thus a real American as opposed to the rest of us, she had the right to tell Barack Obama that he shouldn't identify as black when he, like she herself, was actually biracial. And then they had her do the convocation address at Liberty University, which is not an actual college or anything, but it has dorms and ceremonies. I gave a convocation address at Cornell once, and I talked about, you know, the students and their lives and the issue of moral force and when in their lives on the outside they might have to stand up in the real world for what's right because there are no adults out here. Sage Steele's convocation speech, apparently this past week at Liberty, was about Sage Steele. Her career, her highlights, her ex-husband. She did a slideshow with highlights from her career. Her. And best of all, a slideshow about the day the devil hit her in the mouth with a golf ball.
I heard and felt the worst thing I'd ever experienced in my life. I got hit in the mouth directly, 280 yards away, a line drive from John Rahm's powerful club that we were too far away to hear him say four, and it hit me at 150 miles an hour directly in my mouth. I want you to know what's going through my mind at this moment. I was on my knees. You see my bloody left hand? I had finally realized they're not going to be able to glue the teeth back in. They're not going to be able to put the flesh back in my lip. And I threw it on the ground, and I thought, I sat there and I realized, God doesn't want me to do this. God is telling me to be quiet. God is telling me to just stop standing up for myself. Stop standing up for others. Stop being true to myself. If they want you to say you're black and not biracial, say it. If they want you to say go, vaccine, everybody get it. If not, you want to kill everybody. Say whatever they want, because this is what happens. This is what happens when you're true to yourself, apparently. Then I realized, as I was put on the stretcher in the ambulance, that wasn't God talking to me. That was something else. That was evil. That was the devil, in my opinion, trying to scare me into silence because I had just filed this lawsuit that had made global headlines. And I realized it was up to me, that hit me there in the mouth of all places for a reason, to make sure I didn't stay silent.
Let me skip the other interpretation of this, which was, why would the devil hit you in the mouth with a golf ball after you said all the stupid stuff that ended your television career and thus brightened the lives of literally hundreds of employees at the ESPN campus in Bristol, Connecticut, to say nothing of countless thousands of viewers? And of course, that select group of your SportsCenter co-anchors who have since lost weight or seen their hair grow back and darken simply because they now get to work with somebody who does not fly into a rage when she isn't the one who gets to say the first four words on the show every night. If the devil hit you in the mouth to get you to stop saying that, who made you say all those things that hurt you but helped thousands, maybe millions, that benefited humanity itself and did so without knocking your teeth out your mouth? But let me focus on the background reality here that's far more important than that rhetorical question there. The reality that the evangelicals and the self-absorbed like Sage Steele are uniformly convinced that they, and they alone, are important enough for God to hit them in the mouth with a golf ball, or for the devil to hit them in the mouth with a golf ball, because it couldn't possibly be an accident. Somebody sent that golf ball into your mouth. How many times in your life have you said something that got you into enormous trouble and realized that neither God nor the devil loved nor hated you enough to have hit you in the mouth with a golf ball to keep you from saying dumb spit like that? You are just not important enough for God's golf ball. But Sage Steele is. For Sage, God's golf balls, nothing but God's golf balls, steal today's worst person in the world. Talk about rough.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
The executive producer of our MSNBC newscast Countdown, Izzy Povich, and I were on the grown-up elevator to the office of NBC President Jeff Zucker on the 52nd floor of 30 Rock in New York, summoned there by some garbled message from MSNBC President Phil Griffin about MSNBC being taken off the air. I was mumbling to Izzy sundry imprecations and reminiscences. 8 freaking months is. We spent 12 freaking months forcing them to create Maddow's show. It lasts 8 months. All the crap, prompter practice, getting her over her fears, rockets past CNN, only 8 months of show, and now it's all gone. Izzy reminded me it was not just Rachel's show that was threatened, which was why poor Court Harsin from Hardball was already upstairs, along with poor Ed Schultz and Phil Griffin, and Rachel's executive producer Bill Wolf, and some clown from Morning Joe, and a couple of other MSNBC executives, and us. I know. I did the line from the drunken Irishman from Hitchcock's The Birds, complete with the bad accent. It's the end of the world. I said Jeff Immelt is going to take MSNBC off the air. I didn't need any of my overwrought visions from 2 years earlier of the future of liberal news commentary falling out the NBC window to its death on the rink. This was the real thing. The chairman of General Electric was threatening to open the window himself, throw us out the window himself, and then race down to the pavement to stomp on our dying remains himself. Poor Ed Schultz heard Jeff Zucker say those words, and he had screwed up his face and tilted his head like a puppy hearing a car crash. He had not believed it the first time. He had not believed it the second time. Zucker said it a third time. Immelt is going to take MSNBC off the effing air. Ed Schultz groaned. After weeks of Griffin's coaxing, he had finally just moved from Nebraska to New York the preceding weekend. Yet he was still somehow only the second most strung-out person in the room. You! Zucker shouted at me. You're the smartest one in the room! What the F do we do now? I'll confess I was shaken by this because it appeared for once that Zucker was not being sarcastic. I had never before seen him flush nor flustered. This was a guy who wore fleece in July. Yet now he was beet red and sweating. Sometimes he knew what he was doing, and as his opposition to hiring Maddow had proved, sometimes he didn't know what he was doing. But he always acted as the most confident man in the galaxy. But now he literally had no clue what to do next, and he not only could not ignore my advice, he desperately needed it. This situation and that color on his face were almost worth watching the corporate fascists nuke my network. I asked Zucker to explain what happened. You goddamn well know what happened! Zucker moved towards me, and I stood up, and I told him I would see myself out. He stopped, remembering that he did indeed actually need my help. I'm sorry. I apologize. This isn't Rachel. This is Immelt. Last week sometime, Bill O'Reilly snapped. He told Murdoch he wasn't going to take any more of what you were saying about him on the air, so he did a piece last night accusing GE of manufacturing the components that have been used in roadside bombs that were built in Iran to kill Americans in Iraq. Which is true. Legally, that's true. They found roadside bombs that had like 30-year-old GE transistors or TV tubes from 1954 or something in them. Legally, GE did manufacture components that were used in roadside bombs that were built in Iran to kill Americans in Iraq. So O'Reilly puts this on his effing show as a lead story. And then Fox sent two camera crews and this little crap producer from O'Reilly's show, Jesse Water something, to stake Immelt out and chase him around the GE shareholders meeting in Charlotte. Zucker finally came up for air and I jumped in. Why didn't Immelt have six camera crews to stake out the two Fox crews and chase them around in Charlotte? I mean, isn't that one of our news hubs, Charlotte? Doesn't Immelt own like 20 camera crews there? He bring a camera crew, you bring two camera crews? Zucker started to not like me again. Now you suggest that. Where were you when? All right, never mind. It doesn't matter. Immelt says if there's one more story on Bill O'Reilly about GE manufacturing components for roadside bombs in Iraq, he's taking MSNBC off the air immediately. It'll just be 24 hours of lockup, and I'm fired, and you're fired. And then he pointed at Chris Matthews, producer, and Matthews is fired, and he pointed at poor Ed Schultz, and you're fired. And Ed whimpered. So, smartass, what the F do we do? I feigned all the nonchalance I could feign. If I could have lit a cheroot by striking a match on the sole of my boot, I would have. It's manageable. But Jeff, why is Immelt so worked up about what O'Reilly said about him? Only O'Reilly's nut job viewers actually believe any of that crap. Nobody at GE, nobody investing in GE could possibly believe we're building components for roadside bombs. Zucker inhaled deeply. Immelt's mother believes it. All the heads in the room turned toward the president of NBC. Mrs. Immelt, back in Cincinnati, is a devoted Bill O'Reilly viewer. Watches him every night. Sees this. Calls him. Says, Sonny, why are you manufacturing components that were used in roadside bombs built in Iran to kill Americans in Iraq? I had not expected that. I said to Zucker, so he'll really burn, what, $200 million a year in profits? Just between Rachel and me? Because his mom watches Bill O'Reilly? Zucker got angry again. You bet your effing ass he will. Now, you said it was manageable. How? How the F do we manage it, Olbermann? Just a minute. How old is she? Zucker summoned all his annoyance. How old is who? Immelt's mother. How old is she, Jeff? Zucker was really annoyed. How the F should I know? You're missing the point. I had him really worked up, nearly to the boiling point. It was great. Guess. Zucker spluttered. I don't know. He's in his mid-50s. She's got to be 80, 90-something. I stifled a fake yawn. Yeah, you're right. Probably closer to 90 now that I think of it. So the problem is, she watches O'Reilly. She tells him what's on Fox, what O'Reilly's saying about GE. Well, I think you have a simple solution. I'd say the first thing you do is you send over a couple of big guys to her house and you pull the freaking cable out of the wall. Zucker actually gasped. My producer, Izzy Povich, unsuccessfully stifled a laugh, and I saw Rachel crack a smile. Zucker regained himself. This isn't funny, Olbermann. I crossed my legs. Oh, it's a little funny. And anyway, it's not essential. If the problem is Immelt is threatening to take the network off the air because O'Reilly is avenging himself against me by attacking him and attacking GE, the short-term solution is easy, and in fact, it is manageable. The long-term solution, that's not easy, and that's not manageable, but the short-term one, that's simple. Rest of this week, next week, maybe the week after that even, we just don't mention Fox News on MSNBC. Something resembling a smile crossed Zucker's face. It made him look a little less like a lizard person and more like a monkey with glasses. You do that? Forever? No. Not forever I would not do that, I said. To buy us time? Yes. But remember, who was it who was in my office last winter telling me that I should go on the air and just to F with Fox? I should ask why Rupert Murdoch was still running a huge international media company like News Corp, despite all the reports that he's suffering from dementia, even though there haven't been any reports that he's suffering from dementia. For everybody's sake here, who was that again who told me to do that? Zucker's goodwill was gone again. Obviously, that was me. What's your point? My point is, We built this new brand of ours organically on a couple of themes, a couple of statements of principle, and one of them is, to use your words, just to F with Fox. If we don't F with Fox for a couple of weeks at the start of the summer, who's going to care? Who's going to notice? But like after 2 weeks, 3 weeks, our viewers are going to notice, and the TV writers are going to notice, and then the crap will hit from every direction you can think of. Temporary freeze on mentioning Fox and mentioning O'Reilly and mentioning Murdoch, fine. Permanent freeze? Might as well let ML turn us off in the morning after all. I don't think Zucker actually heard the last part about ML turning us off after all. The lack of color was returning to his face. Okay, breathe, he kept saying to himself. Breathe, breathe, okay, breathe. He looked at me and nodded. He pointed at Izzy and at Phil Griffin and me. You and you and you and I. We will talk tomorrow, maybe tonight, and we'll all meet again next week. Until then, nothing about Fox, anybody. Are we clear? Nothing on the air about Fox. Silence in the room. Then the assorted noises of people rising mixed with attempts to resuscitate poor Ed Schultz. Somebody, Matthew's guy Harsin, I think, was almost at the door out of Zucker's office, an office so big that it was, to steal the Ring-Lardner line, the size of the Yale Bowl, but with lamps. And then a voice spoke up quietly but firmly. Excuse me. It was Rachel Maddow. Excuse me. I will not have the content of my show dictated by any corporations, including the one I work for. Remember, this is June 2009. She still felt that way then. And especially one I don't work for. I will walk out first. I cannot have the audience wondering what else I have not told them. I don't do a lot about Fox on my show, but if there is a story about Fox, I will not honor this freeze. I will report that story, and if I'm prevented from reporting that story, I will leave. Whereupon, she left. Zucker barked. Phil, Alderman, Izzy, stay. When the rest of the room had cleared, Zucker blew air out of his mouth as if it were smoke. He gestured violently at me with his right arm. I told you she was a mistake. You didn't listen to me. I told you. Now she's your problem. All of this is your problem. Get her back on the reservation or else. Now I had run out of goodwill and jokes. Oh, I'll get her back on the reservation, Jeff, but if you think this is my problem, just think about what happens if he really does take us off the air, or if it just gets out that he threatened to take us off the air because his mother didn't like what Fox said about him. That's my problem? That's your problem, and it's the problem of the CEO of the frickin' sixth largest corporation in the world who makes his business decisions involving hundreds of millions of dollars of profits based on what his mother says! At this point, Phil Griffin managed to pull Zucker away, and Izzy and I made for the door, saying nothing until we were in the elevator. Finally, she asked, what are you going to do about Rachel? I looked straight ahead. I have depth perception issues while traveling forward, backwards, up or down. Yeah, if I know what I'm going to do about her. But I got an idea. I mean, the only person she was really talking to in there was herself. This isn't a brand new surprise success for her anymore. This is successful. This is what, 9-10 months? She's successful. She said she was once a dancing cell phone outside a cell phone store outside of Boston. She ain't going back to that. I went to talk to Rachel about an hour later and reassured her. I mentioned that powerful as Fox was, they were not going to be able to reinvade Iraq by themselves. And unless she moved it way closer than it had been, nobody would cross her censorship line. And I said, just give me as much time as the French government took before fleeing during the Nazi advance in 1940. I said, give me, what was it, 33 days? Give me 33 days. If we aren't back where we were this morning, we can both quit on the air. I mean, that'd be fun, right? 3 nights later, well after midnight on a Friday, my NBC-issued BlackBerry buzzed with a quick email from Rachel Maddow. Hey, she wrote, don't necessarily quote me because I'm really drunk, but just make the best deal you can for us. I trust you. We don't need to do Fox all the time. I never do Fox stories anyway. I just had to say that, and this is the best platform we will ever have. Well, she was right, at least for the time being. A couple of weeks later, I had to sneak in a script that blasted Fox, and at 10:30 at home that night, I got a call from a drunken Phil Griffin shouting into the phone, I have a family! Zucker had to go meet with Roger Ailes secretly inside 30 Rock, and I hope they remembered to clean the room afterwards. And Immelt even had to meet with Murdoch. And then, happily, some idiot GE executive decided to boast to the New York Times about getting us little talent children under control and a big deal with the executives over at Fox and how they'd settled everything, which blew up the whole deal instantly because the moment the deal went public, NBC looked so stupid and even NBC News was now risked. The only point of the whole thing was to keep the Immelts and the Zuckers and the Griffins and the Aileses from throwing us and our little island of liberal commentary out of that window at 30 Rock. But as Rachel Maddow and I would be constantly reminded in the ensuing years, 30 Rock has a lot of freaking windows. I've done all the damage I can do here. Thank you for listening. Countdown musical directors Brian Ray and John Philip Chanel arranged, produced, and performed most of our music. Mr. Ray was on guitars, bass, and drums, and Mr. Chanel handled orchestration and keyboards, produced by TKO Brothers. I keep thinking we are nowhere near the end of the current MSNBC-NBC News controversy because, among other things, we haven't had the lawsuits yet or the managerial firings. Or whatever's next, wherever in television they now hire her without ever noticing
that she sounds like this, that she's terrible on television, even before you get to the insurrection part.
The settlement is clear to me. All right, never mind. The settlement between Romney McDaniel, and NBC, it's clear to me where this ends. Anywho, other music, including some of the Beethoven compositions, were arranged and performed by the group No Horns Allowed. The sports music is the Olbermann theme from ESPN2, written by Mitch Warren Davis, courtesy of ESPN Inc. See, the solution is NBC pays to have her deviated septum fixed and then hires her to anchor between, say, 2 and 4 in the afternoons. They already have a contract. Our satirical and pithy musical comments are by Nancy Faust, the best baseball stadium organist ever, who mistakenly thinks I can actually sing. Our announcer today was my friend Howard Feynman, and everything else was pretty much my fault. That's Countdown for this, the 223rd day until the 2024 presidential election, the 1,178th day since Dementia J. Trump's first attempted coup against the democratically elected government of the United States. Use the 14th Amendment and the not regularly given elector objection option. Use the Insurrection Act. Use the justice system. Use the mental health system to stop him from doing it again while we still can. The next scheduled countdown is tomorrow. Bulletins as the news warrants. Till then, I'm Keith Olbermann. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and good luck. Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts. If you dare.
Hey.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.